shake, shake,
shake, shake, shake,
and just us all. Shake, 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 let me see you move.
Shake and just us all. In the name of freedom, shake and just us all.
Shake, shake,
shake, shake, shake,
shake and just us
all.
Shake, shake, shake,
shake and just us all. In the name of freedom, shake and
just us all. No, no, no,
no, no, no, no.
We don't want the wall.
No, no, no,
we don't want the wall.
No, no, no,
we don't want the wall.
In the name of freedom,
we don't want the wall.
No, no, no,
no, no, no,
we don't want the wall.
We don't want the wall.
No, 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 no,
no, no,
no,
we don't.
We don't want the wall.
No, no, no,
no, no, no,
we don't want the wall.
We don't want the wall.
In the name.
In the name of freedom, we don't want the wall.
Shake, shake, shake.
Shake, shake, shake.
Shake and just, come on, let me see you shake.
Shake, shake, shake,
shake and
just us all.
Are y'all shaking?
Shake, 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 shaking just us all. In the name of freedom,
shake and just us all. No, no, no,
no, no, no,
we don't want the wall.
No, no, no,
we don't want the wall.
No, no, no,
we don't want the wall. How they sound without the music.
No, no, no,
we don't want the wall.
No, no, no,
we don't want the wall.
No, no, no,
we don't want the wall. In the name of freedom,
we don't want the wall.
Shake, shake, shake,
shake, shake,
shake, shake and just us all.
Shake, shake, shake,
shaking just us all.
Shake, shake, shake,
shaking just us all.
In the name of freedom,
shaking
just us all.
Shake, shake, shake,
shake, shake, shake,
shaking just us
all.
Shake, shake, shake,
shake, shake, shake,
come on and shake it all.
Shaking just us all.
Shake, shake, shake,
shaking just us all.
We're keep saying in the name.
Freedom, shaking just us all.
In the name of freedom,
shaking just us all.
In the name of freedom.
All right, keep on, keep on, keep on. Mike, man, bring this up a little bit. Bring it up so I can hear myself. Bring it up, bring it up, bring it up. Now, y'all put your hands together. Now, put them over your head. How many of y'all are ready to shake and just us all? All over the nation. Bring this mic up some. All over the nation. Huh. Now give me a little shoulder. Come on, give me a little shoulder. Give me a little shoulder. Shake, shake, shake.
Shake the devil's off.
Oh, yeah.
Shake, shake.
Yeah, yeah.
Shake the devil's off.
It's all right.
Shake, shake, shake.
Shake, shake.
Shake and just us all.
Give me her mic.
In the name of freedom, shake and just us all.
Give me her mic, come on.
Shake, shake. Shake and just us all.
Shake, shake, shake.
Shake and just us all.
Shake, shake, shake.
Shake and just us all. In the name of freedom, shake and just us all.
No, no, no. That's it. Here you go, y'all.
We don't want the wall.
No, no, no.
We don't want the wall.
No, no, no.
No, no, no.
We don't want the wall.
We don't want the wall.
In the name.
In the name of freedom. We don't want the wall.
Last time, shake.
Shake, shake, shake.
Hey.
Shake the justice off. Shake, shake, shake. Shaking justice off. Shake, 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 shaking just us all. In the name of freedom, shaking just us all.
Y'all sound pretty good. You sound pretty good. We always include a standard movement song because they're always going to be dear to us. And they're always going to energize and instruct us and encourage us. And so when we're marching tomorrow, I hope that all of us will be saying, ain't gonna let nobody
turn me around.
No,
turn me around.
No,
turn
no,
me around.
No, ain't gonna let nobody
turn me around.
I'm gonna
keep on walking, keep on talking, marching up to freedom land.
That's okay. And we can do better than that. Okay? So I'm going to need your foot stomping, your hand clapping. And here's the rhythm. All right?
That's it.
Stomp till the ancestors walk up in here.
Are we ready?
Ain't gonna let nobody
turn me around.
We were at the Vatican together when they did this recent piece on labor unions and race about 4 months ago. I'll call it.
And I'll
keep on talking.
Marching
up to freedom land.
Turn me around.
these wooden floors. Here we go. Come on, stop. Ain't gonna let nobody
turn me around.
No.
When you came in, but I bet you are not tired right now. I am the Reverend Amanda Poppy. I am privileged to serve at the Washington Ethical Society, a humanist congregation here in Washington, D.C. And on behalf of the D.C. Coordinating Committee, I want to welcome you here to Washington, D.C., to the seat of power in our nation, where its residents don't even have the right to vote, to elected representation. I want to welcome you to our beautiful city with all of its gorgeous monuments, where people are struggling to pay rent and to afford childcare, where people are struggling with one and two and three jobs, struggling to make it in our city. You know the story because it's the story across America. We're no different here, but we are honored to be here tonight, to be with all of you, to be letting go of the tiredness and picking up instead strength and solidarity and possibility with each other. So it is good to be here with you tonight. It is good to have you here to be together, creating a new possibility in this city, a new possibility in cities and in towns and in rural areas all across this country. I am glad to be with you.
Four together. Four together. My name is Reverend Janelle Bruce, and I'm the pastor of the Church Without Walls, and I am so glad to be here this evening. I am also proud to be the organizer for the state of Maryland. Is Maryland in the house tonight? Is Maryland in the house? In Tennessee, shout out to the folks in Tennessee and Arkansas and Alabama. We are one movement all across 37 states plus D.C., and we are here together to say we will not stand for injustice anymore. We will not stand for systemic racism, for the ecological devastation, for the war economy and militarism, and the distorted moral narrative. We are here to force the narrative and to take the narrative back. We are ready. We are ready. We are ready. We will now hear from the pastor of this house, Reverend Stephen Baines. Let's welcome him with a hand clap as he comes.
Thank you so much and welcome.
I am not the distinguished senior pastor, but I am one of the ministers of this wonderful, wonderful church. Our senior minister, Dr. Stephen Gentle, is sitting over there and has graciously asked me to welcome you to National City Christian Church. Most of you here were last Sunday evening, and what a revival we had. Did we not have revival? We did. Welcome to all of you at the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival. I just had to chuckle as we sang that opening song, Shake It Off, because we had a dog blessing out on the steps this morning at 10 o'clock, and that's all I've been doing is shaking off dog hair all day long. It's been a great day, and it's going to be a great evening. Welcome to you all. Welcome to the repairs at the breach, the Cairo Center, and I see we have the Reverend Jesse Jackson that has come as well. Thank you to all. Let's create revival on Pentecost Sunday.
And we will now have our responsive reading by Reverend Julia Jarvis from Interfaith Families Project of Greater Washington. And those who are able, we ask you to stand and join with us. And then we will hear from Reverend Dr. William Barber.
Good evening. Good evening. We stand at a crucial moment in our nation's history. We have fewer voting rights today than we did 50 years ago. 23 states have passed racist voter suppression laws since 2010. At least 17 states have targeted Native American and or Alaskan Native voters. Just breathe all that in. Will we be a people who protect the rights of some at the expense of others, or will we be a moral people who demand justice for all? We stand at a crossroads in our nation's history. Federal spending on immigration, deportation, and border policies is more than $17 billion, while 340,000 immigrants were removed or deported in 2016. Will we separate families, build walls and detention centers, and continue to scapegoat, punish, and divide? Or will we dismantle systems of oppression and violence? We believe that the power of our government derives from us, the people, for the purpose of providing for the general welfare and protecting the human rights of all. We know that 13 states with voter suppression laws refuse to expand Medicaid, and that 25 states have laws that preempt cities from passing minimum wage laws. Therefore, we the people will rise up and stand for justice and kindness and liberty for all.
Thank you.
We denounce any oppression and violence in our communities, especially in our indigenous communities, where tribal lands and ancestral burial grounds are being demolished. And water is being poisoned. When Native American children have the highest poverty rate of any racial group in the United States, over 200,000 Native Americans and Alaskan Natives lacked access to complete plumbing. We know that we must seek justice together. We come to understand that all of life is connected, that my well-being is connected to your well-being. Take that in, breathe that in, that my rights are connected to your rights. Only then can we become the beloved community.
Be seated for just a moment. I first want to let you know that we have people watching online. This mass meeting as far away as London tonight. And we're going to be announcing in a few days where more than 10 other groups in 10 other countries have joined in solidarity, Graylin, with the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for a moral revival. And that number may rise to 30. Tonight, we have thousands of people online tonight, thousands of people in more than 40 states and the District of Columbia who are with us online tonight. On last week, when we did the moral, nonviolent moral fusion, civil disobedience and direct action, the first goal of this campaign was to break into the narrative. We trended number two in the world and we were in every major news outlet in this country, beginning to say that we have to deal with the issue of poverty and racism and ecological devastation and the war economy. And so things are working. More than 1,000 people across this nation engaged in nonviolent confrontation, civil disobedience with the policies of violence. Some have said that's more than any time in history, simultaneously together, a wave, so much so that in 7 states, they shut down the entire downtown rather than arrest the people. But the people said they're coming back again and again and again and again and again. Are you ready to come back again? Now, tonight, as we gather before we see, because, you know, normally we allow a testifiers to talk before Liz or I say anything, and there's a video for testimony, and then the Reverend Graylin Hagler is going to testify tonight from a D.C. perspective of a place of voter suppression that we don't think about and talk about, but it's all linked together. But before that, we have a friend in our midst tonight. He is an elder in the movement. He's been there a long time, and a whole lot of people benefited. I did when I was in college and coming up. He was the mayor of the original Resurrection City in 1968. He heard what we were trying to do and said, look, I just want to come and be a part. He's joining with Poor People Tomorrow here and others who will join in doing the act of nonviolent moral civil disobedience. would you, I don't have to say anything else. Could I just ask you to welcome the Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson tonight as he comes? There we go.
Say I am. Say I am. Somebody. I am. Somebody. Red and yellow. Brown, black, and white. We're all precious in God's sight. Everybody is somebody. Stop the violence. Save the children. Feed the hungry. Clothe the naked. Set the captive free. This land is our land. Forward ever. Backward never. Keep hope alive. Keep hope alive. Keep hope alive. Let me hear you scream. Let me express what a joy it is for me to be with you today, to be with Sister Liz Theo Harris, his sister beloved. Give her a big hand, please. Give Liz a big hand. My friend and sister beloved with whom I've worked across the years, Sister Roz. Roz, please stand. Give Roz a big hand. Thank you. Well, I'm overwhelmed with joy every time I'm in the presence of Brother Barber. He has clarity of direction. He speaks with moral authority. He is convincing. He has the strength of character and the will to fight back. We must never take Reverend Barber for granted. People like him don't come in bunches like grapes. They're rare like pearls. Put your hand together on your feet for Bishop Barber. On your feet for Bishop Barber. On your feet. On your feet. On your feet. On your feet for Bishop Barber. On your feet. It's a marvel revival. Marvel revival. Marvel revival. Marvel revival. Marvel revival. Let me scream one more time. As I look into your faces today and think about the first phase of the struggle for poor people's campaign, we're not going to let anything stop us. Moses would not let Pharaoh stop him. Jesus would not let Herod stop him. The King would not let George Wallace stop him. And Trump will not stop us. Remember Dr. King's last birthday, January 15, 1968. He was planning the Poor People's Campaign. He didn't realize it would be his last birthday. It becomes your burden to finish the mission. That morning around 8 o'clock, he had breakfast at home with his family. Around 10, he came to church with blue jeans on, dungarees, and a windbreaker jacket and a sports shirt. He'd gathered a group of us who had never worked together before. It was his way of reaching out, building a massive coalition of conscience. There's some whites from Appalachia and the Smoky Mountains there, who iron workers and steel workers, some blacks from deep South Georgia and Alabama and South Carolina and Mississippi. There were some Native Americans there from the various reservations, the Cherokees and across the country and the Apaches. And some Latinos and some of Chavez group from around the Southwest area out in Denver and Southern California. He had convened a body of workers from labor, some Jewish allies from New York, working with Al Lowenstein. There we met how to end poverty, how to fight poverty and stop fighting the poor. He spent that morning on a lecture on how to end poverty and salvage the integrity of the poor. Jesus was a poor Jew. And yet his character was of such until he did not stop, until he was able to put direction in place for us to fight, relieve the poor of their pain. And so it was around noontime, Janona Clayton came in with a cake and said, Doc, you forgot it was your birthday. We stopped, we ate the cake, we drank the punch. And then Al Lowenstein gave a lecture on how to end the war in Vietnam. Dr. King's point was that the monies designed for the war on poverty at home to heal was going to war in Vietnam to kill. And we had to end the war abroad and, in fact, focus on the war at home. We had to stop killing 3 million Vietnamese and start healing the unemployed and working poor people in our own country. He said, now, when we get through, we're going on to Washington. That was just before the issue of Memphis came up. We're going on to Washington. We're going to engage in civil disobedience, Brother Barber. He said, we're going to tie up traffic. We're going to force the Congress to make a choice between us and Vietnam. We're going to go on to Washington. We're going to tie up traffic. We're going to make the Congress come to deal with us. So tomorrow, we're going on to Congress. Say tomorrow, we're finishing Dr. King's mission. We're going on to Congress. Going on to Congress. If necessary, going on to jail. Put your hand together. He also reminded us that there comes a phase in our struggle, Roz, where we have to, in fact, come to grips with the hard work of, he said, when you go to jail and you're marching there, some exciting adrenaline is flowing. See, there comes a time when it's just down to hard, cold work and production. My friends, in 1965, for the first time in 85 years, African Americans had the right to vote. Let's not forget, we got their citizenship in 1863, right to vote in 1865. 2 years later, even citizens, we didn't have the right to vote until 2 years later. Then in 1877, they turned us back over to the hand of our former slave masters. And from 1880 to 1950, 5,000 blacks were lynched. They went from denying the right to vote to terrifying us as we sought the vote. From denying the vote to terrifying as we sought the right to vote. We could vote the kind of long lines you saw in South Africa we had right here in America. And 8 black congressmen from South Carolina. We majority of populations in South Carolina, Mississippi, and Arkansas, Alabama, and Louisiana. But through really terror, the lynching of people, hanging of people after church on Sunday, burning people and burning women, burning children, through terror they drove us north. We went north as refugees, not as migrants. We went north as terrified by the South. Here we come full circle again. In 1965, the reason why I love this coalition that Brother Bob is working on so diligently, and Brother Bob, it won't necessarily be easy because you're going counterculture. Blacks didn't have the right to vote. White women didn't have the right to serve on juries in the South. 18-year-olds who were serving in Vietnam could not vote. You couldn't vote on college campuses. You couldn't vote bilingually. When that group came together, we went from the balcony in Memphis to the balcony at the White House in 40 years. We survived the wilderness from Memphis to the White House. It was a 40-year battle. We won that battle. We were determined, and we suffered, we sacrificed, and we made it. Here we are today. What is our challenge in this season of 2016, 17, 18? First of all, the fact that America has been done an injustice by installing Trump in the White House. Hillary won by 3 million votes. In the one person, one vote democracy, Hillary won the campaign. I said, in the one person, one vote democracy, Hillary won the campaign. He is sitting in, he stole the White House. He will not steal our dreams, will not steal our hope. Today, my brothers and sisters, there are 4 million African Americans in the South who are not registered. 2.5 million who are registered who did not vote. That alone spells doom for the crisis that we face today. The 4 million high school seniors, and while they're being shot down in Texas and shot down in Florida, my friends, they can do more than mourn, they can march. And they said, we're going to kill all the firstborn babies. Most mothers march, mourn. Moses' mother said, let's march. There comes a time you got to dry your eyes and start mourning and start marching and start fighting back. Say, fight back. Fight back. Fight back. Fight back. Fight back. And so if the high school seniors will come across the stage this month and next month with the plume in one hand, the plume in one hand symbolizing knowledge and wisdom, and the voter card in the other symbolizing power and responsibility, there are more high school seniors at 17 and 18 than there are 71 and 81. So there are more people in America, 17 to 18, than 71 to 81. Students have the power if they will use that power. We won in Virginia because our minds were made up. But the same schemes that denied the right vote, they also figured how to nullify. There never should have been no thump of the coin, flip of the coin about who would win the seat in Virginia. There were 200,000 more Democrats who voted in Virginia than Republicans. That was determined the winner, except the reality was they decided to gerrymander, annexation at large, and roll Pershing. The citizens will not close today. If we have the faith, God has the power to see us through. If we return from racism to embracing each other and loving one another as God has loved us. If we will share together and sacrifice together, we'll be an army for justice. We'll be a coalition of conscience. We'll be the heartbeat of our nation. Mandela survived this struggle in jail 27 years. Dr. King lay mulling in the grave, but somehow his spirit lives on. Dr. King will live as long as we remember him, and we will never forget. Today we march in his name. We march for jobs. We march for justice. We march for health care. We march to end poverty. We march to stop hate. Stop weapons. We ban assault weapons now. Ban assault weapons now. Ban assault weapons now. Automatic voter registration now. And I say to you, Brother Barber, today, as I look across the landscape, the years I've been blessed to be a part of this movement for justice and change, in which I find so much joy. I went to jail July 17, 1960, trying to use a public library in Greenville, South Carolina. I've been marching all these years. I don't feel tired yet. I don't feel tired. The writer said, I once was young and now I'm old, but I've never seen the righteous forsaken, nor this seed big for bread. So keep hope alive. Keep marching. Keep with it. See you in the jail cell on tomorrow.
Come on, give it up. Yes, yes. Yes. That is why, as you stand, there doesn't have to be a false dichotomy. The movements have to connect together. That's how we build strength. We are not in competition with each other. We're in competition with injustice and poverty and racism. And we need everybody on the battlefield. I said a few weeks ago, I was talking to Reverend Jackson, and I said, we need those who have fought before to suit up one more time. And those of us that never suited up, to suit up for the first time. And when we get that together, we have power. One of the things we did in the Moral Monday movement, Liz, come here a second, is we always, on the Moral March on Raleigh's, Grayland, we would always have a torch lit. I'm not going to light a torch now in the man's church. All right. But I need three people. I need one white woman, one white man, and one black man who are post 70 to come stand beside Reverend Jackson. Post 70. That means you're older than 70. Come on, I'm doing something now. Watch me. Yeah, come up. One white woman, one white man, and one black woman that's post 70. You got to own your age now. That gray hair is a. All right, where's the black woman? That's post 70. All right, she's 70. All right, now I need Liz. You go over there with them as a millennial. I need four millennials. I need somebody in who's 20. Four people, black, white, Latino, who's between 20 and 30. Black, white, Latino, native, if you will, who's between 20 and 30. I'm trying to show something. Now, she says she's older than that. Come on. Now, I want those of you that are 20 and 30 to intermingle. Get in a, almost like a circle. Intermingle. Get between somebody that's there. Right. Now, is there anybody in here, is there a young person in here under 15? Ross. Is anybody 15, 12, 13? Come in, young man. Come on. He said he don't want. All right. That's right. Come on. Bring him right up here. Bring him right up here. Come right up here, young man. All right. Now, I'm going to practice this. Y'all going to have to come in some. Just curve in. Curve in. And everybody that can, reach your hands till we all are touching hands in front somehow. And say, we will not be divided. We will build on the strength of the movements of the past. We will build movement in the present. We will build a movement that will birth movement in the future. And we will win because we will stay together no matter what. All right, all right. God bless you all. God bless you. God bless you. So we had an elder to testify. That's in the African tradition. Now we're going to have a video, a testimony, and then we're going to have a young guy. He's about 19 and a half. Reverend Graylin Hagler is going. Let's see this video.
Because I only make $7.25 an hour.
Stop that for a second. I want to tell you what this is. Stop it for a second if you can. This video is a video that connects voter suppression, the racism of voter suppression, to the attacks on poor people. The young lady you hear testifying is a Fight for 15 worker that was arrested for sitting in with other people in the office of the Speaker of the House of North Carolina because they cheated through voter suppression and gerrymandering, and they won office. Once they got in office, they refused Medicaid expansion. This young lady was dying. So people who won because of racist voter suppression ended up passing laws that hurt everybody. And I want you to hear this story and see this coalition. And these were the same people that ended up winning the case against voter suppression in North Carolina. So bring the mic up, bring it up.
I'm here because I only make $7.25 an hour. And I have two kids, and I'm a single mother. And they take $25 to $50 out of my check just to pay as much as I can on my kids' doctors. I have cervical cancer. I don't have Medicaid. I can't afford it. Obamacare, I can't afford it. But I keep getting enough Medicaid. And I'm only getting sicker. So that's why I'm here.
This woman should not be suffering. She should be able to. She's one of the people who is suffering because of the lack of Medicaid expansion. That's a real human being, a mother of two children, who's denied. Why? We pay federal taxes. The money is there. There's no cost to the taxpayers in North Carolina. There's not a penny coming out of this legislature. But we're going to deny her access to health care, access to life.
that's not right. It's not right.
And clergy will tell you, her story is becoming more and more frequent.
Yes.
There are many such stories. I see them every week. People who are giving up medical treatment, who cannot afford their medications, who are having to make a choice between putting food on the table and keeping their lights on. And in this country, this land of abundance, this is immoral. This is wrong. I'm here because Jesus would be right here.
Yes, he would.
Yes, he would.
Right here.
I'm here, and I want to hear these stories, and the speaker needs to hear these stories.
Denying health care is immoral. This is why we're fighting. This is why we are here, so nobody else has to lose a life, so our children don't have to die, so our brothers and sisters don't have to die. We will now hear from Reverend Graylin Hagler of Plymouth Congregational UCC.
Good evening. When I came to Washington, D.C. in 1992, Reverend Jesse Jackson was the shadow senator here in Washington, D.C. Now, some of you may not know that history, that's a part of our colonial status, is that we elected shadow senators and shadow congressfolk in order to try to advocate over the issue of D.C. statehood and to keep that issue before the public and what it meant to live in colonial status. Because this is the only colony on the mainland of the United States. And what that means is a whole lot of other devastating things. In 1973, Congress passed the Washington, D.C. Home Rule Act, but it was limited home rule because it basically conferred upon D.C. the ability to govern itself within limits and within bounds and to state in there that Congress had the ultimate authority over Washington, D.C., and that meant that Congress had the ability to veto our laws, to impose laws, and to create all kinds of other systems that basically fought it freedom and thought it democracy. And that's what we've been struggling. A non-voting representative in Congress, right? And the classic point around that is at one point Eleanor Holmes Norton had the vote, and then Congress decided that she didn't need to vote any longer so they can confer it or take it away at their whim and at their will. Or try to force death penalties down folks in D.C.'s throat. Or when we voted around the whole issue around medical marijuana, the federal government said that if we counted the votes, that they would take away the money that helped to support Washington, D.C. If we counted the votes, understand what that means in terms of the status of Washington, D.C. That means that we can stand up and we can vote for fair housing, but Congress has the right to veto it. We can vote for health care, but Congress has the right to veto it. We can vote to limit firearms and assault weapons in Washington, D.C., but Congress has the right to veto it. And Congress has the right to basically manipulate and control Washington, D.C. at its whim. Now, let me tell you a little bit of history before I go. When Marion Barry, you remember this, Reverend Jackson, when Marion Barry was elected, coming out of prison, he got elected to the city council. And that was relatively okay. But then he got elected as mayor. And at that point that he was elected as mayor, Congress turned off the financial spigots and declared Washington, D.C. bankrupt. And said to the mayor, you will not govern and you do not have the ability to govern except as a ceremonial mayor. and we will give to you the names of those who you will have to hire as a chief financial officer, and you can choose from that list, but you cannot fire that person. And that person became the de facto mayor of Washington, D.C., controlled all the purse strings. But it even goes deeper than that, because you got to remember that Congress occupies so much of the land in Washington, D.C., and does not pay tax, and therefore act as if the money that they pay is somehow undeserved to Washington, D.C. They occupy the land. And they also wanted to make sure that Washington, D.C. could not impose a commuter tax and could not tax at the source. And what that means is that if you work in Washington, D.C., Washington, D.C. cannot tax you, even though you're taking money out of Washington, D.C. into other states and places in which you live. That's what limited home rule means. That's what we've been struggling for, full home rule, to basically say to ourselves and to the world and to the United States that we deserve not just a voting representative in Congress, but we deserve a full delegation of elected officials. We pay more in taxes than most of the states in the Union. We have sent more people to war, to die in battle, come home maimed and mutilated. And in fact, when folks go to jail, I want you to understand this. When they go to jail, they don't even go locally. They go into a federal system. And therefore, they can end up anywhere in the United States, Colorado, California, any place where there's a federal facility, and tell me, how do your family get to see you while you're doing your time if you're halfway across the country? It is unusual punishment, to be certain. And so our struggle is a struggle of self-determination, sovereignty. Last Tuesday, Reverend Barber, Reverend Jackson, Liz, Reverend Liz, we took over the city council here in Washington, D.C. We closed them down over the issue of water. Water. Because when the control board came into power, the first thing they did was to take away all oversight over D.C. water. And so D.C. water became a freestanding agency without any accountability or oversight to anyone, and basically set up as a quasi-private corporation, allowed to set their own fees and pass that on to the consumer. And they were mandated by the court to clean up the river, to build new filtration systems and new tunnels. We don't have no problem with that, because we do want to save the planet and save creation. But our problem is this, is that instead of D.C., instead of Virginia, instead of Maryland absorbing the cost, they passed it on to the consumer. They passed it on to every single person that lives in Washington, D.C., and if you got a $100 water bill a month, I guarantee only $10 to $15 is for water, and all the rest is for the fee that has been passed on, and that fee is going to continue to go up until 2025, and everybody admits when it gets there, it's going to plateau, but the plateau is going to be so exorbitant that nobody will be able to pay for it. And water is able to put a lien on your property and therefore foreclose on your property. If you understand the gentrification scheme and all of that, then you would be alive. Tuesday, as part of our DMV Poor People's Campaign, we're going down to the Wilson Building at 10 a.m. and going to pack it out to really raise the question over this issue of water, and that you got to come onto the table of $40 million in order to relieve people who live in our neighborhoods and in our community. The church went from zero in terms of water before the control board to Plymouth right now is paying $3,000 a month for water that we don't even use. And Rock Creek Cemetery is paying $28,000 a month. All over the city, residents are being bankrupt by this enterprise. And clearly, clearly, we want to clean up the river. But D.C., Maryland, and Virginia, as state entities, need to be responsible for cleaning up the river. And we want our rivers clean, but we also demand that government take on the responsibility of clean rivers, clean water, and everybody can be blessed by the natural resources that the Creator has put in place. God bless you.
It's all connected. It's all connected.
Hold on just a little while longer. Hold on just a little while longer. Oh, oh, hold on just a little while longer. I know just a
minute. And as we live in that, welcome the Reverend Dr. Liz Steele Harris, who's going to connect why you can't deal with the issue of poverty if you're not willing to deal with the issue of systemic racism. It all hooks together. Would you welcome the Reverend Dr. Liz Steele Harris, the co-chair of the National Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival.
Thank you. Good evening, Washington, D.C. Good evening, these United States of America. Good evening, the rest of the world that is tuning in to see something happening in this nation. We're gathered here this evening to remind the nation that we're holding on just a little while longer, that we're not afraid, that we won't be silent, and that we will not rest until all people are free. So this evening, as you know, we have people gathered in states across the country, tuning in to ready ourselves for another powerful day of action tomorrow and for the next 5 weeks. As Reverend Barber was saying earlier, last week we launched our 40 days of action, our season of nonviolent moral fusion direct action, our season of nonviolent civil disobedience. And historians tell us that what we started last week was the most expansive wave of nonviolent civil disobedience at state capitals and the nation's capital here in Washington, D.C., in U.S. history. That's right. And America, you should hear the stories of the powerful, nonviolent, intergenerational, multiracial army of the poor, army of moral leaders, army of activists and advocates that is rising up to break every chain of injustice. There have been hundreds of news articles trending nationally and internationally on Twitter, all kinds of people and organizations coming forward and wanting to be involved. And in the states across the country, a movement is building. In Indiana, the witnesses who stepped forward and led the march in action in the streets near the Capitol not only blocked traffic, but held all their local TV stations live reporting for 2 hours. And those reporters returned to the jail when they were let out 15 hours later. That's right. We're changing the narrative. We're organizing the power of people. In Tennessee, as Reverend Barber was talking about, the people took the street. The people took 2 bridges. The people took the interstate highway. They got that state to stop in its tracks. Think about, recognize the 140 million poor people in this country who are suffering, but fighting. Poor people and clergy and activists were coming together across all the lines that divide us, and we are powerful. And I could report on state after state, community after community that is coming into this movement. We know we're coming back. We will not be stopped. Let us say maybe to this nation, ready or not, here we come. From Alabama to Arkansas, California to New York, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. We have thousands of people, poor people, moral leaders and clergy, activists, and other people of goodwill and conscience taking action together. So last week, we lifted up the impact of poverty on women and children and people with disabilities. We wailed for the moms whose children are no more. Wailed because of policies, racist policies, that made it impossible to get health care, that made it impossible to get the life that everyone is entitled to. And this evening, we explore the connection of voter suppression, the attack on immigrants, the mistreatment of indigenous communities, and the growth of poverty and injustice in this country. We know that systemic racism is central to this campaign, that voting rights are central, immigrant rights are central, sovereignty and the rights of indigenous communities are central to this campaign. And traveling around this country, it has become increasingly clear how deep systemic racism is a sin at the core of the injustices in this nation. How voter suppression, attacking immigrants, and the mistreatment of Native Americans is a huge part of the mess that this country is in. It's become increasingly clear that in order to turn these things around, we must reinstate the Voting Rights Act. We must reinstate early voting and same-day registration and multiple-day voting and automatic registration at the age of 18. We need an end to voter ID laws and interstate cross-check. We must have just immigration policies that lead to citizenship and the right to vote. We must ensure that all indigenous communities have housing and health care and education and sovereignty and the protection of land. And we need these rights now. And we know this because we have met with the Apache Nation at Oak Flats and heard how extreme extraction is ruining their ancestral land, keeping people down, and how in so many indigenous communities, the same thing is happening, and it is not being reported. We know this because in El Paso, Texas, we waded into the Rio Grande water with mothers and grandmothers who have been separated from their families because of an immoral wall and unjust immigration policies. Families and mothers who got to spend 3 minutes in the last 15 years with their kids and grandkids. We know this because in Louisiana, indigenous communities and immigrant Vietnamese and Latinx communities and black communities and poor white communities are all being impacted by policies passed because of racist voter suppression that make it okay to pollute, okay to destroy, okay to impoverish everyone. We know this because in Flint, Michigan, the democratically elected officials had all of their power taken away from them and given to a governor-appointed emergency managers who approved the poisoning of an entire town. That when General Motors came forward saying that the water that they were using was rusting their car parts, but when mothers came forward saying that they were losing their hair and their kids were being sick, those mothers were told comparing car parts and human bodies is like comparing apples and oranges. And Flint, Michigan is one of thousands of communities where racism is used to take people's water away, to poison the water that is in people's sinks, and to make life worse for everyone. I want to share with you all a quote from the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King on the power of pitting the poor against each other. He reminds us that Pharaoh had a favorite formula for keeping the slaves in slavery, And that formula was having the slaves fight each other. Because he said that when the slaves come together, look at how powerful we can be. And that we can see this pitting against each other throughout history. We saw it in abolition. We saw it in Reconstruction. We saw it in the Poor People's Campaign of 68. We see it still today. At the end of the Selma to Montgomery March, Dr. King said, "You see, it was a simple thing to keep the poor white masses working for near starvation wages in the years that followed the Civil War. Why, if the poor white plantation or mill worker became dissatisfied with his low wages, the plantation or mill owner would merely threaten to fire him and hire former Negro slaves and pay him even less. Thus, the Southern wage level was kept almost unbearably low. We see today that if the poor are pitted against each other, poor whites are pitted against poor blacks, poor immigrants are blamed for the nation's problems, poor blacks are kept fighting poor Latinos and poor whites, poor native folks are not even discussed in the national picture, and we are all kept in the ditches of poverty and deprivation. But we are here to say that racism is used to keep the poor disenfranchised, divided, and down. But that a powerful multiracial movement is rising up. Indeed, Senator and Governor and Congressman and President, we poor people are getting into step. We poor white people are getting into step with poor black people, and we're getting into step with poor Latinx people and poor indigenous people and poor Asian people and poor Middle Eastern people. We're getting into step. We're getting into step. We're getting into step because we have fewer voting rights today than we did 50 years ago. There are 23 states that have passed racist voter suppression laws since 2010. At least 17 of those states have voter suppression that has been targeted at Native American and/or Alaskan Native voters. It has been 1,825 days. 1,825 days since the Supreme Court gutted the Voting Rights Act. And 13 of the states with voter suppression laws refused to expand Medicaid. 25 states that did voter suppression have preempted cities from passing minimum wage laws. We're getting into step because federal spending on immigration, deportation, and border policies is more than $17 billion, while 340,000 immigrants were removed or deported in 2016. We're getting into step because there are 140 million poor people in the United States. There are 23 million poor black people, 37 million poor Latinx people, 7 million poor Asian people, 66 million poor white people. And poor people are coming together to build the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival. There are poor white homeless youth in Grays Harbor, Washington State, poor Native people in Arizona and New Mexico, poor Latino people in California and across the border, poor black families in Marks, Mississippi, where the mule train to Washington left from in 1968. We are uniting and organizing poor people in this country, poor black, poor white, poor Native, poor Asian, poor Latinx. So in that same speech, at the end of the Selma to Montgomery March, Dr. King had some inspiring words for us. Let us march on poverty until no American parent has to skip a meal so that their children may eat. March on poverty until no starved man walks the streets of our cities and towns in search of jobs that do not exist. Let us march on poverty until wrinkled stomachs in Mississippi are filled and the idle industries of Appalachia are realized and revitalized, and broken lives in sweltering ghettos are mended and remolded. Let us march on ballot boxes. March on ballot boxes until race baiters disappear from the political arena. And so, America, we march. Tomorrow, we march on the Capitol in D.C. and on state capitals across the country. We return stronger than we were even last week. More determined that marching together, black, white, Latinx, Native, straight, queer, men, women, trans, young women, Christian, old, Jewish, Hindu, Buddhist, those without faith, we can indeed stop this country in its tracks, bring it to its knees, and make it great for everyone, not just for a few. And this march, us getting into step, follows our sacred texts. So just for a second, I want to bring in the Apostle Paul. Perhaps you call him Saint Paul. Because Paul was also interested in people getting into step. He said that the races and nations of the Roman Empire had to get together. And back in his day, these nations, these races were pitted against each other using systemic racism. Galatians were told to hate Macedonians. Romans were prodded to fight Egyptians. Armenians were called rowdy and divided from the Corinthians. And within nations, Jews were set against Gentiles, slaves were opposed to ex-slaves. But Paul has a message in Galatians 3:28. He says that in this movement, there can be no division into Jew and non-Jew, slave and free, male and free, female. According among us, you are all equal. Now, a lot of times this passage is used to say that there are no differences among us. Of course there are. But what this passage is really saying to us is that keep your differences. Keep your culture, keep your faith practices, but do not discriminate. Do not allow anyone to get pitted against you. Do not allow anyone to go hungry or homeless or without their basic necessities. Do not let racism and discrimination and discriminatory policies creep in. That is not the way of God. That is not the way of the movement. In other words, equal protection under the law is non-negotiable. In other words, poverty among anyone is unacceptable. In other words, everybody has the right to live, and a revolution of values is possible. So let us be that change. Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival. Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival. Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival. Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival. Poor Our People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival. Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival. Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival. And so now, we welcome the Reverend Dr. William Barber, who will share what we are to do and how we got to this place.
So as Liz was teaching tonight, and as we're teaching, there are thousands of people, I just talked to Eric, who have watch parties across the nation. We know that there are over 8,400 different places where people are watching and have gathered people across the nation. We ought to give a big hand to that. They ought to give a big hand and welcome them. And that means that there could be as high as 50 to 60 or more thousand people who are actually tuning in, because they know that in every mass meeting, they're going to come to understand why we're doing this. The worst thing you can do is be loud and wrong and go to jail and don't know why. You never should engage in massive civil disobedience just to curse the darkness. It should always be to bring light. It should have a purpose behind it. Isn't it interesting that Liz just used that quote that we also used in the Moral Monday movement, that equal protection under the law is non-negotiable. And today you hear people saying, Graylin, I'm proud to protect the Second Amendment. You never notice they never say, I'm proud of the First Amendment. Or I'm proud of the 13th Amendment, ending slavery. Or I'm proud of the 14th Amendment, equal protection under the law. Or I'm proud of the 15th Amendment that provides the right to vote. Or I'm proud of the, 26th Amendment that gave women the, And so that's what we mean when we say our moral narrative is off, is haywire. And it requires a group of us to stand together and be willing to shift this narrative. Now, I want to do a little teaching tonight, to make sure people are clear that we're not crazy. Nor are we doing this just to, you know, as Dr. King said, to let off a little steam. Our democracy is in trouble. And the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for a moral revival, is clear why we must, as one part of the tactic, engage in nonviolent confrontation of policy violence. And that nonviolent confrontation is through moral civil fusion, civil disobedience. And why, number two, we must also have massive voter mobilization, and why we must have power building among poor and impacted communities, which is why we have Truth for Tuesdays every night at what time?
7:30.
Is that right? You can join by live stream, because the movement has to have the right analysis in order to have the right action. A lot of time movements fizzle because they do not have the deep analysis that's necessary to maintain a movement. Because these 40 days, I hope nobody's tired yet, this is just the launch. This is not the end. This is just the birthing. And last time I checked, when you birth a baby, you got to then raise the baby. You don't just throw the baby out, right? So why are we doing this? This week, our focus is on systemic racism. Say that, systemic racism. Now, the problem in our American culture is, particularly today, when people talk about racism, they normally devolve the conversation down to whether or not you got a black friend or brown friend or native friend. It becomes personal, you know. We deliberately didn't say racism, we said systemic. Systems of discrimination. And by systemic racism, we're not just talking about what impacts black people or native people or brown people, but we're talking about how the system of racism makes the whole democracy septic. Y'all with me? Septic means it poisons the blood. It's like a germ, right? And so because we understand that, we decided early on in this movement to look at racism. There are a lot of places you can look. But we wanted to take the penetrating view of racism through voter suppression, because when you peel that back, you can see how it connects to everything else. Don't y'all worry about what's on the screen. I'm going to tell you in just a minute. Who cut the screen? All right. All right. Just hold the screen. Thank you, sister. Go with me. Now, say voter suppression. And that is why this movement has to fight for D.C. statehood, because it's not just about D.C. It's about D.C., but it's about the systems, right? We also have to vote for early voting. We also have to fight for same-day registration. You ought not have same-day registration in North Carolina and not have it in other states, right? We ought to have automatic registration at 18. If I can go to be automatically drafted to war at 18, I ought to be automatically able to vote on the people that drafted me. You see what I'm saying? And it's not impossible because states already, like Illinois has it. But the problem is it's state by state, but we need to have this state by state, which is why you can't have a poor people's campaign that only focuses on D.C. Because your voting rights are not undermined first in D.C. Voting rights are undermined first at the state level because the state is given power by the Constitution to set voting laws. Somebody said, teach, Bob. I'm trying. What Grayling taught me, I'm trying. We need also full restoration of the Voting Rights Act. Full restoration. Now, and that's not just about black. I heard Liz gave a number. I used the number 1790, but whatever that number is, from June 25th, 2013 to today, the McConnell, Ryan, and formerly Boehner, forget for a minute Trump. Get away from the Trump addiction. There's something worse going on in this country than this Trump. There would be no Trump if there weren't systems that trumped our voting rights in place that helped him get in office in the first place. In some sense, he's just like a moral malady. He points us to the deeper problem, right? Full restoration of the Voting Rights Act. We're getting ready to go through the third election without the protection of the Voting Rights Act for the first time in 50 years. Just hold that for a minute. Just all over the nation, just stop right there and think about that. We are about to enter the third election where states can pass laws that have a history of racism and voter suppression, and those laws do not have to be pre-cleared. They can be put into action. Legislators, congresspeople can be elected. 5 years later, you can find out the law was unconstitutional. But for 6 years, they would have been in office passing it. So we have unconstitutionally constituted state legislators. In the 21st century, unconstitutionally constituted congressmen. And in any other country, people would be in the street. That's why we have to fight. That's why we have to have multiple days vote. Now I know y'all think all the racism is down south. That's why we decided to look at it through the lens of voter suppression. You know New York only has one day to vote? All those people in New York. In fact, North Carolina has more days to vote than New York. Think about it. Detroit. Most of our major cities at one day. How do poor people get off work? How do working poor people? That's also why we must have an end to gerrymandering. I'm not going to teach too long, but I want to teach just a little bit. And you know, gerrymandering didn't start in the South. Gerrymandering came out of Boston. It was the design of a Massachusetts guy who named Jerry. And he created these districts to protect himself that looked like a salamander. So they call them gerrymandering. But it's used in the South, right? And used across the country. And we must end felony disenfranchisement when it comes to voting. Two things don't don't make a lot of sense to me. I'm probably going to get in trouble with the media for saying it, but I'm going to say it. Two things don't make any sense to me. You pay your debt, and then you still have to pay, and you're no longer treated as a citizen. That's like coming out of slavery and then still having to deal with Jim Crow. Is that right? The second thing that doesn't make sense to me is we have a whole lot of people locked up for what you can now sell legally. Y'all hear what I'm saying? That doesn't make sense to me. That 10 years ago, you're locking people up for now what you can sell legally. And not only you can sell it legally, you can smoke it out in the open. I was in California, got high. I know, but let me explain it. I was in a hotel, and I kept smelling something smelled like strawberry. And I'm partial to strawberry. And I kept sniffing it, and I said, that's some good stuff. And all of a sudden, I stood in the yard, I said, I'm hungry. Then I said to Charmaine, go get me something to eat. She got me a big old hamburger. I said, I'm still hungry. Then they looked at my eyes, and they said, Rambo, what's wrong with you? I said, ain't nothing wrong with me. They said, something wrong with you. And come to find out, over there where, you know, you can buy it and smoke it and carry it on, somebody was smoking it. And since I had never touched nothing like that, you know, it was hard for me to get a contact. I'm sorry, I'm confessing. This is the church, I can confess. They ain't gonna do nothing to me. But my point is felony disenfranchisement. Now, Ari Berman wrote a book called Give Us the Ballot. Y'all listening with me? All over the nation? He said that one of the most underreported dangers to our democracy is the current unconstitutional systemic racism of voter suppression and gerrymandering. Watch this. We do not know yet what Russia did. We guess, but we know what voter suppression has done. And the reason we've got to be willing to even go to jail and do civil disobedience, because it is a disgrace when we hear all of this conversation about Russia that we're guessing. I'm not saying it isn't an issue, especially if there was collusion, and we can believe it was collusion. But when you know that there were millions of people whose voters' vote were disenfranchised, that ought to be front page of every paper in America. And if people understood that voter suppression is not just about black people, it would be. And that's why we got to have this fusion movement. 23 states, say 23, have passed voter suppression laws before Trump got in office. This is BT before Trump. 31% of African Americans in Alabama are hindered, 31%, from voting because of the law. 31%. And a large number of white women are disenfranchised because of, voter ID laws. They say that Trump won Wisconsin by 30,000 votes. In Ari Berman's book, they were able to prove there were 250,000 votes suppressed. The Brennan Institute, I want y'all to be clear, we're not playing when we're talking about going into Capitol tomorrow around this country. This is serious stuff. The democracy is under assault. The Brennan Center has reported that about 13 to 14 seats in the United States House of Representatives would probably not be in the party category they're in if it was not for racial gerrymandering. Now think about that. You might not even have had Ryan or had a tax bill or have people attacking chips. And this isn't even about Democrat or Republican, because even whoever you elect, you still got to keep it on them. You got to keep the heat on them. But the point is, people are not winning elections. And if we are, see, this is the thing that we know in the history of the civil rights movement. You can't be concerned about foreign domestic terrorism if you're not concerned about domestic terrorism. So you can't be concerned about Russia hacking your system if voting laws are hacking your system every election over and over and over and over again. Now watch the trick they play. Watch the trick they play, because this is some smooth gangster stuff. You know, I talked last week, Liz, about the gangsterization of our politics. So here's what they did. They took a case out of Shelby, Alabama, took it to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court, under Justice Roberts, who, by the way, had said one of his goals in life was to overturn civil rights law. Right? So under his court, he says, well, we no longer have the kind of racism that we had in the past. So he said, the formula that causes Section 5 preclearance of the Voting Rights Act to be implemented, he said the formula, Section 4, is off. So we're going to gut that. That's like taking the keys out of the engine out of the car. Now, the vote was 5-4. I want y'all to hear me on this. Lyndon Baines Johnson said, listen to this across the nation, that the Voting Rights Act was the most important piece of legislation in the history of this country. The most important, not the. He said it was more important than the wars we fought. And on June 25th, 2013, the Supreme Court, in a 5-4 vote. Now watch this. The Brown decision was a 9-0. Even a former Klan member who was on the Supreme Court voted against separate but equal. But the Voting Rights Act was overturned by one vote. And the day that it was overturned in my state, a senator said, now that the headache has been removed, let us go to work. Trump wasn't anywhere around. And when they gutted Section 5, here's the gangster part of it. The Supreme Court said, we're not going to nullify the whole Voting Rights Act. We're going to put it in the Congress, and they can fix Section 4. And if Mr. Boehner and Mr. McConnell and Ryan and the crew will fix Section 4, then Section 5 will be re-implemented. Now, Strom Thurmond, we called him a straight racist, even though he had a black mistress and a girlfriend, she wasn't a girlfriend because she was too young to be a girlfriend. That's a whole nother issue. And he had a daughter by her. But we call him a racist, and he only filibustered the 1957 Civil Rights Act for one day. All over the nation in this room, turn to your neighbor and say, one day. Okay. So that's all one day. And we said Strom Thurmond was a racist. McConnell, Ryan, and Boehner have refused to fix the Voting Rights Act Section 4 for over 1,700 days. It's just sitting there. Oh, no. They did offer to fix it. And what they said is they would allow it to be fixed if the only states that would be covered would be Texas and Georgia, and all the other states would no longer be involved. They offered that. Right? Because they said there's really no more racism. And since that time, I know, because we had a case, we had the worst voter suppression case in the country since Jim Crow in North Carolina after the Shelby decision. We won, but it was 6 years almost to win. We beat them on gerrymandering, we beat them on voter suppression. But listen at what the Roberts Court had to agree with. Now, this is the same court that said there wasn't enough racism. When we pushed that case through the Fourth Circuit and got it to the Supreme Court, they had to agree unanimously. Now, this is the same court. Even Clarence Thomas had to agree that what had happened in North Carolina was surgical racism. Now, surgical racism might be worse than just straight up racism, because it means you don't know they've cut your heart out. See, the point of a surgery is to cut and remove something and leave the least amount of evidence that you did it. And the only way we caught them was we sued. People told us not to fight, and we fought, and we got emails and found out that they would call, they would email the Board of Election and say, of this early voting and same-day registration, how many blacks used this? How many whites used this? And whenever a law came, one of the provisions was used in a large way by black people, they said, let's vote that down. Let's change it. But it took us 6 years. Then the law would have never passed if preclearance had been in place. Most of these states that have passed voter suppression, if preclearance was in place, it would not have made it through preclearance. Now, and the last point I want to make, if somebody says, well, Rembaba, see, that's the problem. Now you all have gone and made the Poor People's Campaign a national call for a moral revival about just about black people. We knew you were going to do that. You know, you're going to make it just about black people. Well, here's the thing. White nationalism and racism is not just against black people, it's against humanity. It's against democracy itself. But let's push a little bit on this. Everywhere there's voter suppression, the people who get elected using racist voter suppression laws, once they get elected, they pass laws that hurt mostly white people. Now, that's a trip. I'm being real colloquial tonight because I don't want anybody to miss me. I could be all prophecy. But I want you to think about that a minute. You use racism to get elected. And you fool people with, you know, being against gay people and stuff, and you get people to vote for you, and then you hurt the very people. And I don't blame the people. No. I blame the treachery that would do that. Now, let me show you what I mean. Watch this. Now we can do some maps. Let's do some map. Somebody say, teach Bob. I'm trying. Let me see now. These states, watch this. Because we need to understand why you cannot, and I want you to tell all our neoliberal friends who say, we just need a movement that focuses on economics. You cannot deal with America if you don't deal with racism and poverty together. It's just impossible. That's why it requires white people to be able to speak on racism like Liz did. Dr. King said at the end of the Selma to Montgomery speech, he said, every time there's the possibility for black and white people to join together and build powerful coalition, the racist aristocracy finds ways to separate them. Now watch what's happening. You see all those states with voter suppression? Look up there. They're everywhere. Now one that we didn't color in, we need to go back in this map, is Alaska. By the way, you see Alaska down there, looks right little. You know Alaska is bigger than half the United States and 3-4 times bigger than Texas, but it's made to look little. That's a form of geographical racism. I don't have time tonight to deal with that, but that's what that really is. Right. But you see all those states that are either green or light green, that's even California, even New York, but look at all the southern states where the dark green is. Now, in those dark green southern states, there are 171 to 180 electoral votes, which means if you can just control the 13 states from North Carolina to Texas, you only need about 99 more electoral votes to be president. You understand this, you'll understand why Trump and them did what they did. And all of them have done what? Passed voter suppression laws. Right. Now, watch this. Because most of the so-called red states are not necessarily red states, they are voter suppression states. That's what they are. If they didn't have the voter suppression, and if people would register and vote, you could actually turn them from being so-called red. But watch this, next one. Uh-oh, look at that. Go back a second. Uh-oh, look at that. all the states that are voter suppression states are also the states with the highest poverty rates. Now, we've already proven that of the 140 million poor people, the majority of them are white women, children, and the disabled and working. Even though the largest percentage of race is black and brown people when it comes to percentage of race, but in pure raw numbers. So, now, watch this. The same states that are voter suppression states are high child poverty states. Watch this. Bam. The same states that use racialized voter suppression are also the highest state for women in poverty. Next one. The same states that have voter suppression have politicians who refuse to pass living wages. Think about that now. That's not just hurting black people, but many of them get in office through racist voter suppression. And those same states are anti-union states. Next one. Look at that. Every state that was basically a voter suppression state, except for a few couple, also refused to expand Medicaid. Now, how did that happen? For instance, in North Carolina, 500,000 people were denied Medicaid expansion. 340,000 of them were white. 30,000 were veterans. But the people who voted not to expand Medicaid were elected through racist voter suppression. So they used the tactic of racist voter suppression to get elected. But once they got elected, they passed legislation that hurts or blocked legislation, mostly white. And that's why white people and black people and brown people and red people and yellow people who are poor or working poor cannot believe the hype anymore. We cannot allow people to separate us anymore. We cannot get in our corners and fight alone. We must build these fusion coalitions. And when somebody say, is it race or is it poverty? We say it is. It's both of them. Next slide. Uh-oh, my LGBTQ brothers and sisters, you cannot fight or care about the concerns of the LGBT community and not be concerned about voter suppression. Because the people who do the most damage to the LGBT community are the people who get elected through racist voter suppression. So fighting racist voter suppression is a gay issue. It's a white issue, it's a black issue, it's a Jewish issue, it's a Christian issue, it's a Muslim issue, it's an everybody issue. Now, don't go any further. I could take you through gun protection, same thing, gun laws. I could take you through in the states that are giving the most leeway to corporations that are poisoning our water, same rule applies. Wherever you see racist voter suppression and racist gerrymandering, people get elected who pass policies that hurt in raw numbers, mostly white people, and in percentage of race, mostly black and brown people. So we better have a movement. That's why this movement is like it is. That's why it's diverse, because you cannot deal with the other issues and not deal with systemic racism. Let me conclude by saying, you know, racism is nothing but idolatry and self-worship. And I want to just conclude here. There are two scriptures I was thinking about today. One is Genesis 1, where it says we all created in the image of God. See, systemic racism and voter suppression is not just a politically wrong, it's theologically wrong. Because we don't give the right to vote to pets, parakeets, and puppies. We only give the right to vote to people. People, by faith tradition, is that people were created in the image of the divine. Which means anytime you suppress somebody's vote, you are denying the image of God in them. And you are suggesting that you're God and you have a right to push another human being down, which is a nothing but a form of idolatry. And that's how genocide of Native people and slavery got started anyway. Evil economics, that is, you make the money any way you can. Sick sociology, that people can't be together based on their skin, based on skin color. Bad biology, where scientific racism said you can determine brain size by skin color. But the last thing that caused genocide and slavery was what we call heretical ontology. And that is the belief that God made it like this. Now, today is Pentecost. And in the Jewish community, it's called the Feast of Tables, Feast of Weeks. In the Christian tradition, Pentecost. And I went back this morning, Graylin, and read that text, and I'm through, on Pentecost, and found and looked at all the people that God politically had there. It had the Parthians and the Medes. Yeah, they were from Persia. And he had Mesopotamia. They were from Syria and what we call modern-day Iraq and Kuwait. He had Judea from there, folk from around Jerusalem, folk from Cappadocia, Pontus, Asia, Phrygia, Pamphylia. They were from Roman province. And today we would call those Turkey and the Black and the Asia around the Black Sea and the Mediterranean. They had folk there from Egypt in Africa, Libya. Used to be called Cyrene in the Bible, but Libya was there at the day of Pentecost. And the Cretans were there from Greece. And the Arabs today, what we call Saudi Arabia, Yemen, Oman, United Arab Emirates, Qatar, they were all there at Pentecost. I ain't talking about Trump's politics. I'm talking about God's politics. I'm talking about what Bishop Carey said yesterday, that the whole world was a sanctuary. And God got them all there. Good God from Zion. And the Spirit fell. And everybody was impacted. Huh? When God moved, everybody had a right to the Spirit. Regardless of what country you came from or what your skin color was. All I come by to say that any doctrine of racism that prevents somebody from any access to any part of this democracy is not just against the American Constitution, it's against the way of God. Because when God moved, in a Pentecost move, everybody has access. And I stop by to tell you across the nation, we need a political Pentecost. We need a new wind to blow in America. We need a new fire in America. We need some new tongues in America. The tongues of love, the tongues of justice, the tongues of mercy, the tongues of grace, the tongues of everybody got a right to live. We need a new spirit in America. Where Eric, touch your neighbor and say, new spirit, new spirit. We need a new spirit all over America. Turn to your neighbor and say, you belong here. That's the politics of God. Say, you have a vote here. That's the politics of God. We need that kind of thing to break through. And if the parties can't do it, then let the movement do it. But it's time for a political Pentecost. I'm tired of elections being stolen. I'm tired of people pitting black people against white people, against brown people. I'm tired of the legal battles. It's time for us to mobilize. It's time for us to register. It's time for us to have the legal battles we need to have. And it's time for us to change the map, not so much from red to blue, but from wrong to right. And we can do that. We can do that. We can do that because it's time for a political Pentecost in America. And that Pentecost begins with the Poor People's Campaign, a national call.
We are the power. We the people are the power. We are the power. And we need everyone to share. because the people are the movement. We know this is a ground-up movement. So we're getting ready to pass some plates. We're going to pass the plates around. We know that power comes from organized people and organized money. Amen? We need two things, organized people and organized money. And we're going to ask everyone to make sure that we are at our state capitals on tomorrow, Monday, in 37 states and D.C. Is D.C. in the house this evening? D.C., who we are praying and fighting to get that statehood and working and organizing to get that statehood. So tomorrow at 2 p.m., everyone, go to your state capitals. That is where we will be. And we need you to share this. Share the news articles that are coming out. Tell somebody about the campaign. Text Moral to 90975 if you haven't had a chance to join the movement yet. And then we need you to tune in for Truthful Tuesdays. We want to be educated about the things that we're talking about. We want to make sure that we stay on message because other folks can stay on message. So when we're talking, we want to know what we're talking about. Gather some folks together so that we can sit and that we can learn and that we can build community. And then on Thursdays, come back together and learn some more and hear the truth. Gather our folks together and let's talk about it. Let's learn about it and let's do the work. We have nothing to lose but our chains. It is our duty to fight for our freedom. It is our duty to win. We must love and support one another. And we have nothing to lose but our chains. Forward together. Forward together. And tomorrow we're fighting for an end to systemic racism. We're fighting for healthcare. So what do we want? Let's say healthcare. What do we want? When do we want it? If we don't get it, if we don't get it, if we don't get it, what about a living wage? I believe we need a living wage. What about a living wage? What do we want? When do we want it? If we don't get it, if we don't get it, if we don't get it. And y'all, we need our vote. We need the vote, and we need people out there who are ready to vote. So when I say an end, when we say, what do we want? We want the vote. What do we want? When do we want it? If we don't get it, if we don't get it, if we don't get it, we will be at our capitals. Join your capitals. America, we are putting you on notice that until these issues are heard, we will be shutting stuff down. Amen? Amen. We are ready. We are ready to break every chain. We are ready to be loosed. We are ready to continue the fight. Amen, amen, amen.
There's an army rising up.
I want to go out. Why don't we all stand?
There's an army.
We are the army.
Rising
that is rising up.
There's
people
an
of
army
faith. People not of faith.
Rising up.
We are the army. Why don't you grab
break
the hand of the person
chain,
next to you?
Break every chain.
We have the power to break the chains.
To break every chain.
We have the power to change the narrative.
Break every chain.
We have the power to end poverty. We have the power to end systemic racism. We have the power to end ecological devastation. We have the power. People are the power. So tomorrow, when you go to your state capitals,
break every chain.
Let them know we are here to break the chains. And we will be back every week, every Monday. We will be back.
Break every chain. Chevy.